In spite of predictions for a drab, brown fall, Iowa trees are dressing up in their finest autumn colors. Today, we'll find out where color is peaking and when it should peak where you are. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day, and DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here. We'll talk about fall color, how this summer's hot, dry weather seems to have affected the autumn show, and we'll find out how you can track the color peak as it moves down the state. We also want to hear about what the color looks like where you are. Horticulturist Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension will also be here. He and Mark will answer your questions. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and in just a few minutes, horticulturist Richard Giron of Iowa State University Extension will join us. With me right now is DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. And Mark, a few weeks ago, I believe you predicted that we were going to have a very drab, brown fall, and that's not how it's shaping up at all, is it?
When did I predict that?
You said it.
I don't remember that prediction.
I'll go back and find the tape.
Please find the tape. I think we all said that the drought could have an impact on the color, and we didn't know what was going to happen. The one thing I was talking to a person yesterday is, on some of these colors, they're actually, especially the purples and the reds, are actually produced in the fall. So having cool nights and clear days, which we've had a lot of in the last 2 weeks, we've actually had some really good situations. Now, we did, in the understory of our forest, in some of our areas where we're drier, we did have certain species that still kind of are blahing out there. This last 2 days has just been pretty incredible. Things are really turning on, and the colors are actually looking pretty good.
Yeah, very vibrant out there. And, you know, during the summer, we did talk about this. During the summer, we saw, with the intense drought, we saw trees changing colors in July.
Right.
We saw that. And so I think a lot of us were thinking, is this all going to just fizzle?
Right.
But clearly,
it has not. Now, with that said, we still have to – we don't want people to forget about the drought, because even though we may get just a brilliant fall color here, we don't know for sure, but it's looking like it should be pretty decent. We can't forget those younger trees that we've had in the ground for a couple years or just planted. We need to keep watering those because we're still not getting any rain. And we also have to remember, in a couple of years, we may be talking about the drought of 2012 and its impact on our natural resources and our forests, because we're still under a lot of stress. But for now, I think we should enjoy what we're seeing.
Does stress on a tree ever make it more vibrant?
Actually, drought situations to some degree can actually promote sugar production. And sugar production is really good for fall color. And so, again, depending on the situation, it can be kind of a twist, and it can help with the color. But the one thing that really helps is those clear, sunny days. We haven't had any clouds the last week or two, and those really kind of cool, crisp nights. Because what happens is, during the day in those nice, clear days, you get sugar production in the leaf. And at night, they get trapped in there. But for certain colors, like the purples and the reds, those are actually produced because of those stored sugars or those trapped sugars. So that's really working into the formula here and really kind of making things come out. Now, with that said, I have seen a few trees that are still kind of drab, and I think that could be drought-related. And the other reason, some of those trees, you know, the drought really kind of picks out the sick ones. If you had trees that turned fall color 3 weeks ago or a month and a half ago, that's an indication that that tree was under stress. That was a defense mechanism by the tree to try to shut down early, to try to defend itself for next year. So that tree is telling you something. So if you had some stuff that turned quite early, those trees are potentially going to have some problems later on. But like I said, even these ones, the whole thing is the trigger is day length. As the days get shorter, that is a true trigger. Now, how long that color lasts, the vibrance and stuff, has a lot to do with the weather from that time on. you know, the switch turns on pretty much the same time every year, but we always talk, is the peak the first week of October, the last of September, is it set, you know? And that, a lot of that comes to weather as far as when things are really going to show up.
Right. Well, and I'm thinking back to last autumn and autumn's past, and one of the differences that I think I'm seeing, and you can tell me if you think I'm crazy, this year, is that it seems like we're having more trees turn vibrant colors at the same time instead of the, you know, the early yellows and then
right.
moving into the reds and the
right.
purples.
And that could be something to do with the drought as far as timing. Everything's kind of shut down. Because generally what we get is, the way it starts is we get the purples of the sumac, and we've been getting that the last 2 weeks. We get the yellows of the ash, the green ash, and tied with that, we usually get the purples of the white ash, which we are getting right now. But then the oaks tend to come later. The oaks are kind of always hanging back, and so sometimes you can get what we call the peak, but then for 2 weeks you get all these vibrant oaks and stuff starting to show their fall color. I did notice yesterday that even some of the oaks are starting to think about, hey, maybe I should change too. So you're right. The thing I think is it's just kind of, even the yellows, they're all kind of coming at the same time. It's just because over the last 2 days, on Tuesday, I drove from Iowa City to Palo, and there was nothing. It's like, wow, you know, this, what's going to happen here? Yesterday, I drove, and it's like somebody took a paintbrush and just started spackling yellow all over. I mean, it's just like the light turned on. It's like, whoa. And I mean, as you can tell, I'm a little excited. It was really neat. But then the maples are trickling in there, and then I'm seeing a lot of white ash in our upland forest and stuff starting to show. So it's just like truly overnight, those colors have turned on, and they're ready to go. And I know in northeast Iowa, they have a lot more maples that have turned or are turning, and a lot of yellows, and then the oaks are just starting up in that area.
And, of course, the color does tend to move from north to south in the fall.
Correct. So you tend to get your peaks usually a week or two earlier in, say, northeast. Like we have Yellow River Forest clear up in northeast Iowa. I talked to them this morning. They have a lot of yellows, a lot of maple. But he said the oaks are just turning on, but there's a lot of color up there. And, you know, the other neat thing that kind of looking ahead is if you look at the temperatures coming the next week, fairly warm during the days, most of them pretty clear, nights in the 40s.
A lot more of these perfect conditions.
And, you know, as long as we don't get a lot of wind, that's the thing that can happen. You get one rainy day or a good windy day, those are the kind of things that can kind of shut things down or turn them a little blah. The other thing that happened last year is things kind of came out of the shoots pretty good, and then we got kind of dreary, and then those colors just weren't as vibrant. They were there, but they just kind of, we had kind of about 3 or 4 or 5 days, really nice colors, and then the weather kind of changed last year, if I remember right, and a lot of the oaks and stuff just kind of turned brown. And if you remember last year, we were kind of starting that drought in the fall, so that kind of was the beginning and kind of had some impact. So I'm done predicting because every year we're wrong.
We just wait
till it comes, and we say, well, it could do this and it could do that.
So I'm looking at the map on the Iowa DNR website, and we've put up a link to that on our Facebook page, and it says typically in the last week of September to the second week of October, we see the peak up north, the northern third of the state. Is it peaking up there, would you say?
Well, according to our area forester, Robert Honeywell, he said he thinks probably you're looking at peak next week, which is the first week of October. And again, it's what you define as peak. And he was the same.
Thing.
Yeah, it's very subjective. It's really hard. What we're starting to get into is it pretty? And right now, it's pretty. Is it going to stay pretty? It kind of looks like it's going to stay pretty for at least another week or two. And like I was saying earlier, what tends to happen, you know, if you define peak as the maples, you know, next week up there may be the peak for the maples. But then if the weather conditions stay good, we may have some bitternut hickory, shagbark hickory, and then the red oaks and the white oaks maybe give us a good show too with that spackling of no leaves with all these other colors. So it just kind of depends. But from the maple aspect, at least in Northeast, you know, sometime next week, by the end of the week, you may be looking at that kind of peak, and then what you get from there may depend on the weather. Down in this area, I still think we're, you know, a week to 14 days somewhere, maybe the second week of October.
And we're in Iowa City.
In Iowa City, Cedar Rapids corridor, we're, you know, we may be looking at another week and a half to 2 weeks before we get the peak. But if you want to see some color, at least from I-80 north, you're going to start to see some color this
week.
And it's
going to be a lovely weekend, so you might want to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And if you want to follow along throughout the fall, where do you get the current fall reports? The tourism office has one.
Tourism office has one. We actually have a phone number for the Iowa DNR. It's 515-233-4110, and they update that every Monday. And I think I gave you a link yesterday that you'll probably put up.
Yep, that's up on our Facebook page.
You can
right
go
now.
To our DNR site, and you can get those same comments on our website, where it actually lists all the way Northeast Iowa, Southeast, North Central, Central, Southeast, Northwest, and Southwest. Our different foresters in those areas give their weekly reports, and those will be up every Monday. And then there's some other links on there for other sites, too, depending on where you're going. The thing I always say to protect myself here when it comes to predictions is know somebody in the area that you're going and call them and have them call you when things are starting to look good or coming around. And also, if you really want to see color, be ready to leave in a day or two's notice because we could have some beautiful color, but 2 days later you've got a storm front coming and it's going to be rainy and cool and kind of drabby, and then all of a sudden that color could go away. So if you really want to take that drive and you don't want to risk it, so to speak, or be disappointed, kind of be prepared to leave in short notice and get out there and take a look because they can come and go very quickly. Or hopefully, maybe this year, since we're all kind of stressed from the drought stress, well, it'll kind of linger and kind of give us
nice.
Some joy
after
going into winter.
After a punishing summer, it
That's
would be
right.
nice to have a few beautiful weeks here. I'm talking with DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. We've been talking about fall color, but of course, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, will join us in a moment. And you can ask your questions of Mark or Richard. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. We've been talking about fall color. And when you call today, let us know what it looks like in your area at 866-780-9100. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture, is joining us now. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And what does it look like in the Ames area?
Well, as I walk to and from work, we have some really nice yellows on the white ash. Some really nice kind of orangey purple on the ash too. So basically ash right now, a little bit of yellow on the black walnut, but mainly ash.
All right. Well, you are welcome to join us with your call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dean is on the line first from Dubuque. Hello, Dean.
Hello.
Hi, what's the color like up there?
Well, here in Dubuque, things are turning. The oaks are starting to turn. We have some very vibrant maples, reds and yellows. So things are definitely turning up here, and we look forward to going up around Prairie du Chien and Gay's Mills this weekend.
Oh, great, great. What's your question?
We were down in Fulton, Illinois last week along the Mississippi River in a Corps of Engineers Park, and we found a bunch of nuts under trees, and we thought they were hickory nuts. They look like hickory nuts, but the shells are much thinner and the husks are much thinner, and they're kind of bitter, and we were wondering what they were.
Well, Dean, you actually hit it right on the head. They're probably a tree called bitter nut hickory. Some people call them pig nut, but there actually is a true pig nut as you go further south. But we do have a species in central Iowa, central Illinois, that actually also gets, you'll find it up in the Dubuque area, but it is called bitter nut hickory. The nut, the only one that you would get it confused with is maybe a pecan, but a pecan's going to be longer and thinner. But this one is, I wouldn't call the husk paper thin, but it's a lot thinner than your typical shagbark hickory husk. And
right,
the nut is smaller, and they do have a bitter taste. The one thing we do notice, though, the last couple winters that have been a little harder, and actually I talked to someone the other day, because of the drought, you know, we haven't had as good acorn production in some areas. The wildlife, even this fall, have started to eat the bitternut a little bit just because that's available.
Yeah, we put them out and the squirrels went for them. The squirrels love them.
And that's what I'm hearing. And actually, normally, I can go through a winter, Dean, and if it's not real harsh, I can find a lot of bitternut for you in the spring still. So because of the weather and other things, lower production on some of these other species, they're trying to survive, and they're going to utilize what's there. But typically, they won't use it as much. But that tree, they'll turn a nice yellow fall color. But they are definitely a hickory. But the common name is bitter nut.
Dean, thanks so much for your call. I don't know if I would have thought to taste it, but.
Well, I'm glad he did.
Yeah.
Because it lined right into the answer.
Well done. Awesome. You know, I've seen a lot of walnuts in my yard. This is very anecdotal evidence this year. The walnut production in my yard is
been
still
good.
Nice and strong.
You know, the walnut production every year is decent, but then it fluctuates, you know. It's usually there. This year, one thing that happened with the walnuts, because of the drought, there was a lot of early drop on the smaller stuff, but we are getting some mature ones that have made it through the end. The thing that helped, too, is a couple weeks ago, we did get a little bit of rain throughout the region, and that kind of helped. And I think from this drought stress, too, it kind of helped slow things down a little bit, maybe. And so hopefully that'll have some positive. But we still need more rain.
Yeah, we do. Next up, Marvin's on the line in Rockwell City. Hello, Marvin.
Good morning. Fall colors up here is reason for my question. The ash are turning. They're very beautiful. But I'm concerned if the ash borer gets here, and from what I've been reading, it's not a question of if, it's when. What can the state suggest to people or the Forestry Service for replacing trees with something hardy? Get them going now before we lose all ash trees.
That's a great question, Marvin, and we continue to do that. We continue to talk about diversity. I can't tell you that we're necessarily going to replace that yellow fall color, but we are looking, you know, even in urban areas, talking more about planting our native oaks like red oak, white oak, swamp white oak, even black oak, looking at species like honey locust, and looking at all kinds of different species. And the other thing we have to be careful of, though, is basically to make a long story short here, it all started in the 50s and 60s with the elms. We had Dutch elm disease. It came in and wiped out all the elms. And what did we do to replace those? We planted a lot of ash because they were fast growing. They replaced those trees. But we also planted another species, and that's maple. We have an insect called the Asian longhorn beetle that has been in Chicago, now in Ohio, now in Massachusetts. Its favorite food is maples. So there's something for everything. So all we can continue to do is try to promote diversity, and we are trying to do that in our programming and those kind of things. And I always tell folks, if you're going to plant two trees in your yard, plant two different species. If you're going to plant five, plant four or five different species. And we're always going to have new things coming. But you're right. It's not if, it's when. And the emerald ash borer so far is still isolated in northeast Iowa, Almaquy County. We did find a few more kind of coming out of the river in some small towns surrounding the river up there where they found them originally. But because of firewood movement and those kind of things, even though there's quarantines, this insect is going to move. So all we can really do is promote diversity. And the other challenge is we have new disease insects coming all the time. And I know it sounds kind of gloomy, but if we continue to plant diversity, that's our best defense. But that's a great comment, Marvin.
Thanks for your time.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Marvin. And here's a question for Richard. Ian is on the line from Dubuque. Hi, Ian.
Yeah, hi, Charity. Thanks. My question is, Richard, is it too late to reseed grass right now?
It's getting close. I would say if you could do it maybe this weekend or early next week, I'd give it a shot. Once you get into mid to late October, it's too late. And so if you can do it this weekend, early next week, you should be okay. Once you do that, make sure you keep the seed bed moist with frequent watering. And if you do that, the grass should be up in a couple weeks. And by late October, you should have a pretty good stand.
Great. And is it time, and can we be planting trees and shrubs right now? Is it time for that yet?
You can definitely do that. Whenever you plant something like a tree or shrub, it's expected that you have to water. So it's been dry. That's continuing. But if you plant something, go ahead and water that well. Keep on watering that on a regular basis until the ground freezes in late November or December, and the tree should be fine.
And actually, Ian, with the warm temperatures that we're having, the soil temperatures are staying up. And if you get those trees and shrubs in the ground now, we might actually get a little bit of root growth going in the spring, which will actually be beneficial too, as long as you keep that good moisture there.
Great. Thanks for the time, guys.
All right, Ian, thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension. And the next call is from Ron in Fairport. Hello, Ron.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I've got a grove of white oaks. They're quite old, maybe 125 years old. They're separated by my lawn, and on the one side there's some sort of disease. Some say chestnut borer. It's definitely not blight. And what they did this year is they lost chunks of branches, and now they are turning a beautiful red, while the oaks on the other side, which are healthy, are just still green. Someone suggested that I might put on a cambistat this fall. Have you dealt with that at all?
Yes, I have, Ron. And cambistat actually can help with, supposedly, with root development and those kind of things. The thing that's really important is to try to diagnose what actually is going on there. And if it is two-line chestnut borer, what usually happens with two-line chestnut borer is they respond to stress trees. And usually with two-line chestnut borer is you'll see a scattering on the top of dead branches, kind of starting on the top first, and then maybe if that tree continues to be suppressed or stressed, they will start to move down the tree and you'll start to see more decline and death. There are some other possibilities. If you're in Fairport, that means you're in Muscatine County, correct?
Correct.
Okay. I do cover that area. And what I would suggest is that you call me either today or next week, and we talk about it in more detail and try to figure out maybe what the history is there and different things to see if there's something else related to that. And then we can also maybe talk about getting some pictures to me to try to look at what you got before we try to come up with maybe what you should do.
Okay, well, this is what I used to call antlers on the top of the tree is where they're dying.
Okay, and that does have an indication that it could be two-line chestnut borer. That's one of the possibilities.
Okay.
But if you go to iowadnr.gov and then go to Environment and Forestry, you can find my phone number. Give me a call and let's hook up because that is in my district, and we'll try to look at it in more detail for you.
All right, Ron, thanks a lot, and good luck with that. Next up, we'll go to Willie on the line in Ames. Hello, Willie.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I was planting daffodils under the crabapple tree yesterday, and I find little bitty white grubs. They look just like the regular white grubs that we find in lawns, but they're very, very small, about the size of a small green pea. And my question is, the tree had a lot of the Japanese beetles last summer, mm-hmm. and I was planting further away along my back fence where there were no trees, and I found no grubs at all. Could this be Japanese beetles, or what do those look like when they...
Well, the larvae of the Japanese beetle are very similar to the common southern mass Schaefer larvae. So they're very similar. They're basically kind of whitish. They typically have a brownish red head.
That's it.
They have three pair of legs near their head. They're always kind of in a C-shaped form when you find them in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
They're fairly common, both the larvae of the southern mass Schaefer and the Japanese beetle. At this point, though, as far as trying to control them, insecticides at this point probably would not be very effective. You have to apply that fairly early on, typically in August or possibly early September. So a curative product right now probably wouldn't be very effective.
Okay, what would you put on earlier then?
Well, basically you have a couple approaches. One, you could put on a preventive insecticide before they're there, typically in late June or July. If you want to wait, you can, and only treat if they become a problem. And then you'd apply a curative product, typically in August or early September.
Can you give me some brand names?
Well, the curative products typically have on their bag, they kill the grubs in 24 hours. That's a selling point. It's typically very prominent on the bag.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a preventive type product, something like Grubex, for example.
Okay, and the curative would have to be put on when then?
Oh, they're typically applied once the actual insect is there. And so we would typically apply those in August or early September.
Okay, and the preventative?
Preventative typically in late June or July.
Before they get here.
Right, before they're there.
Okay. Well, we can hope, right? Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Willie.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And next up is John on the line in Dubuque. Hi, John. Hey, John.
Hi. Yeah.
Okay, what's your question?
I'd like to know if these wild mulberries that grow in the around Northeast Iowa, are they male and female? If they never have fruit, can they be cut down?
Well, here the deal is, John. Most of the mulberries that we find out there, if they have a real shiny leaf, fairly smooth, most of those are non-native, called white or Russian mulberry, and it's a good idea to cut them down. You will find, though, some male, some female on mulberries, but sometimes you'll get production later on in life, too. So you can get some variability in that production. But most of the mulberries, a person would want to be able to identify it. We actually have a native mulberry called red mulberry, which we don't want to cut down because there isn't very much of it. But most of the mulberries you see along the fence rows, underneath power lines, underneath other trees, especially like windbreaks and evergreens, a lot of those are the non-native white mulberry, and they're very, very aggressive and non-native.
Okay.
So if you can identify them as that, I would say go get them.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of these don't have fruit.
But if they'll have a real shiny leaf. There's a nice publication if you Google, I think it's white mulberry versus red mulberry. I think it's Indiana has a nice little publication online that kind of shows you the difference between the two. But I would promote the native and not promote the non-native.
John, thanks a lot for your call. And is there a difference? You say white mulberry, red mulberry. There are fruits that are different colors. But
well, it's funny, though. The white mulberry has a lot of red fruit and a lot of purple fruit and not white. The actual white is not very common. Do you agree with that, Richard?
I agree, yes.
Yeah, it's just not, but it's got that name. And it actually was brought here to help grow moss for silk production. And it's done very well here. And it's very competitive compared to the native. I don't find the native hardly at all. I find a lot of the non-native white mulberry.
All right. So you, but you can't tell necessarily by fruit.
You cannot tell by the fruit, no. Very well.
You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I think we can slip in an email question before the break. This is from Fred. He says, my wife planted 3 burning bush shrubs in the backyard 2 years ago. They won't be burning this fall because in spite of our best efforts, they got very beaten down by the heat this summer. The leaves on the plants are dry and brown. She thinks we should cut them down this fall and see if they recover next year. What do you think?
I would instead water them maybe 2 or 3 times this fall and not prune them back at all and see what they do next spring.
All right. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension and Mark Vitosh from the Department of Natural Resources. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Oh, pardon me. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. That was my fault, not Dennis Reese's fault. And my guests are Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester, and Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim is on the line in Boone. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, my question involves a boring insect in a pin oak and a red oak tree. My trees were transplanted by tree spade in the fall of 2010, and last fall on the pin oak, I noticed a hole that looked like it was drilled in about 6 inches above on the trunk. And I just filled it with silicone caulk, not knowing what happened. And now I've got a bark exfoliation about 2 foot above it. And I think it's, from my limited research, a clawing moth insect larvae. I want to know if there's anything I can do to try to help the tree. The pin oak looks good, but I don't like the what I'm seeing with the bark. It looks like it's clear through the cambium area.
Right.
So,
I guess I'll jump in first.
I'll let you.
Okay. I think the tree has sustained some type of trunk damage, and that has weakened the tree, and that may have attracted the borer. So what I would do, is give the tree very good care. That means watering that tree regularly when it's dry. I would do that basically until the ground freezes in late November, December, and do that again next year if we have a dry year. Do everything in your power to ensure it has good growing conditions, and then see if that tree can deal with the injury by itself if it has good growing conditions. But as far as spraying the tree with anything, probably not very effective.
And okay, thank you.
Jim, you're probably still listening out there, but I think a lot of it's probably related to the fact that if you tree spaded, it was probably a larger tree in 2010. Yeah. We've had some dry conditions, which I think that's part of the stress. There's a lot of borers that come in on stressed trees, and Clearwing's one of them. There's a number of other borers that can come in there. So like he's saying, the big thing is trying to keep that tree healthy to defend itself. Once you start getting a lot of borers in those situations, though, it's often hard to reverse it. And chemicals are usually more of a Band-Aid. The real problem is the stress on the tree. And actually, I've seen a very similar situation in Iowa City where they brought in some large trees in the last year and a half, and they actually had the same thing. We actually did find the borer activity, but it was related to that stress. So like Richard said, all you can try to do, and I would not fertilize. I think water is your key to trying to maintain the health of this tree early on. And if things don't go well, I would suggest next time, if you do use a tree spade, come with a smaller tree. You know, even if we do things right with the tree spade, the bigger they are, the more roots you lose and the more stress you have on that tree. And a lot of times going a little smaller, it's less stress on the tree, and that tree responds quicker and then grows faster.
All right, Jim, good luck with that. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we do have a few lines open right now, so if you want to get in, 866-780-9100. Let's go to an email question, and this may take you a little bit outside your comfort zone, Richard, but you might know the answer to this one. This is from Derek in Iowa City. He said, we've had some significant damage to our lawn lately from, we think, raccoons digging for grubs.
Right.
We don't do chemicals, so our approach has been to wait the process out and follow with grass seed when we think the raccoons are done tearing up a given area. My question is, do the raccoons sense where the grubs are and just dig there, or do they kind of poke around and hope to get lucky? I'd feel better if I thought there was a method to the raccoons' madness.
I'm not sure if they can hear them or what, but they are very active. They'll probably be active for another maybe 2 or 3 weeks at least. So by then, it's going to be too late to sow grass seed. So basically, I would try to maybe repair the damage as best I could by putting it back, tamping it down, maybe keeping it well watered. And then maybe next spring, if the damage is severe, maybe going ahead and do some seeding. But it's probably too late, even if you wanted to use an insecticide. It's probably too late to get that right now.
Will skunks do that too, Richard?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it could be either raccoons or skunks. I'm assuming maybe food is scarce. Maybe there's fewer nuts and berries. And so those nice fat grubs are actually quite tasty, apparently.
Yeah, and I don't know the definitive answer to this question, but I am fairly familiar with raccoon and skunk behavior, and I don't think they would dig unless there was a reason to dig.
So me either.
They can't waste that kind of energy and make it.
So maybe they use a stethoscope.
They might. They very well might. I cannot comment on that. All right. Joe is on the line next in Fort Dodge. Hello, Joe.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. What's your question?
I wish it was tree related, but again, it's grass. I have a large playing field, and I don't have the resources to irrigate it. So I'm looking at maybe just throwing some ryegrass seed on there, and I'm just wondering, would that do any good this fall? Should I wait till spring? And without irrigation, do you have any solutions for growing grass on a field, a large field like a football field?
Boy, if you can't irrigate and it doesn't rain, it's just not going to germinate. And that's a problem that we're having this fall. If you have good seed-soil contact, the temperatures are terrific as far as the soil temperatures. The thing that's missing is the rain or the moisture. And if it doesn't have moisture, it's just not going to germinate. So the forecast is for dry weather over the next week or so, and I just don't see the seed germinating if there's no moisture. So I guess I would be inclined to wait and do it in the spring and hope that the weather in the spring would be more favorable.
Well, what about the old wives' tale of just going out in the spring before the snow's melted and throwing the seed on that?
Well, that would be the dormant type of sowing of seed. Basically, late summer is the best time to sow grass seed. Usually we're saying mid-August to mid-September. Spring is regarded as the second best time. But you can also go out possibly around Thanksgiving or early December and sow grass seed. And that's called dormant seeding, and that's probably the third best time to do it. And the theory is if you do it basically in late November, early December, as the ground freezes and thaws during the winter months, it kind of cracks and it kind of works the seed into the soil. And so by spring then, you have the seed into the soil, so you have good seed-soil contact. And then as soon as it rains and we have proper temperatures, that seed germinates. So you could go out in late November, early December and do a dormant seeding.
Okay, Joe, good luck with that. And hey, what's the color like around Fort Dodge?
Great. We're starting to see things turn, and, you know, we're kind of the northern third of the state, so Things are getting real beautiful around here, and we got a lot of trails to go and bike and hike around. So they've done a lot of development on the trails up here in the northern part of the state. So just come up and see the trees around here. It's really nice. Kennedy Park, that area is fantastic.
All right. Well, enjoy, Joe. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Next up, we're going to go to Tom on the line in Indianola. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What's your question?
We're thinking about spraying our lawn again this fall for broadleaf, and we have two questions. We need to fertilize it also, and will spraying work this late in the fall? Will it do us any good for next year? And if we put, I would like to put down a pre-emergence herbicide with the fertilizer. Would that stay and then work in the spring?
Well, as far as putting on a broadleaf herbicide, actually October is a good time to do it. So there's no problem there. Now, in many cases, it's been so dry that the weeds themselves are under some stress. And so my inclination would be to maybe wait, and if we get a rain at some point in October, then apply your broadleaf herbicide after that, because that rain should revive the weeds, things like dandelions, violets, whatever. And once they're revived, they'll absorb the herbicide much more effectively. So I'd be inclined to wait at this point. It's been so dry, and put it on later in October. As far as fertilization, late October, early November is a good time to fertilize if you want to fertilize. But you want to put your pre-emergent on next spring. Applying it this fall, it's not going to work.
Okay, so don't put the pre-emergent fertilizer on this winter. Wait until spring if we're going to do
right,
it that way.
Right. And in your area, that would typically probably be around mid-April of next year.
Okay. And our lawn now is mostly dry dirt and dry and dormant bluegrass. So.
Okay.
Okay, right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Tom.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Next up, we've got Pat on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, I had bought a cold hardy cactus half-price sale at one of the big box stores. This says that it's hardy to 20 degrees Fahrenheit. I was wondering if I can keep that in the house this winter.
Well, you could try that, or you could possibly put it in a cool location, possibly an unheated garage where it gets cold but not extremely cold. So those would be the two options, because you couldn't leave it outside, but if you have a attached unheated garage, maybe it would be okay there or possibly in the house.
But there wouldn't be any sunlight in the garage. Would that matter?
Well, I don't think it would a great deal in the winter months, no.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Pat. And we have time for a couple more calls at 866-780-9100. Jeremiah is on the line next from Jessup. Hello, Jeremiah.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I'm an avid outdoorsman. I'm a hunter, and I'm just really curious on what impact the droughts had on, you know, like the nut-bearing trees, you know, as far as, you know, the ones that are really, the deer are really particular for, like white oaks, stuff like that. I haven't had a chance to really get out and take a look for myself, so I'm just curious about that.
Well, I'll tell you, in the Iowa City, Cedar Rapids area, and actually even Jackson County, Jeremiah, the white oak actually has been pretty good. The one species I haven't seen a lot of is red oak. I've seen a little bit of black oak. We had some bur oak early. Bur oak usually comes in September, but I would not say we have a bumper crop of white oak, but we, at least in kind of this east central area, I have seen some decent white oak in areas. The other species I saw quite a bit of the other day over in the Amana area was shagbark hickory. Saw a lot of shagbark hickory. I've seen some bitternut hickory, which we talked about earlier, but I would not say we've had a bumper crop of oak, Jeremiah. You know, we did have some kind of late frost, so on some species that could have been the reason. And actually, the last couple of years, it's been very cyclic, and it hasn't been the greatest. But being out in the woods, I've actually been somewhat happy. I've seen more than I thought I was going to see with this drought.
All right, Jeremiah, thanks a lot for your call. Ron is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a question about mast crops. The last 2 years, we live in a
mature oak timber in the middle of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And the last 2 years we had basically zero acorn crop. I assumed it was due to environmental stress, but I thought this past year would have been even more stressful, yet we had about a half to two-thirds of the usual acorn crop. So I'm just curious what could have caused the no acorn crop for the last 2 years.
Well, that's a great question, Ron, and we actually were just talking about that with the last caller as far as what we had this year. In this year, are you seeing mostly white oak in the Cedar Rapids area? Do you know? Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah. Yes, we have mostly white oak in our area.
And that's what I'm seeing in this general area this year is, you know, an average to decent crop of the white oak and not much of the others. I'll tell you, basically every year it's a cycle. The thing with white oaks, they produce acorns every year, and they'll go through their cycle all in 1 year. The red oaks, it takes 2 years for their cycle. But for each, we tend to see things in cycles. We have good years and bad years. The thing that often affects it, though, is not as much stress or drought, but it could be the timing in the springtime when they flower, or the year before, if they were stressed, they'll often produce more flowers for the next spring. So last year, we were semi-dry, late summer, fall, when you get some of that flower production. So we maybe had a little better flower production this spring, which may have caused the white oaks to do a little better. But this spring, we also had some late frost, which nips back some of those flowers too. So the weather really does kind of make that kind of up and down. And I've been in this area for 12 years, and every couple years we have a bumper crop, and then in between we either have nothing or a little bit, and it just kind of goes that way. But the weather does have, from year to year, and even in the spring, has an immediate impact on how that crop's going to turn out. The other thing is this year, because of the drought on some species like walnut, and I saw a little bit of this on bur oak, we had some premature drop. Those acorns and those nuts didn't always get to mature, and they actually dropped early because of the stress. But luckily, we're going to get some white oak this year, which is good because we need it.
All right. Ron, thank you so much for your call. And Mark Vitosh, thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's always a pleasure.
Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. Enjoy that color out there. Richard Geron, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And, of course, we'll be back with Horticulture Day next Friday. And it seems like we've been saying way too many goodbyes here on Iowa Public Radio lately, and we've got another one to do today. Our executive producer, Jeff Schmidt, is leaving us. He gave us that old politician's line. He said he's leaving to spend more time with his family. But in this case, we know that that is actually true. And Jeff, you are a heck of a talk show producer. You are a terrific boss, and we'll miss you for that. But we will miss you more because you are a true friend. All the best, Jeff. And don't forget to take that gravel home. Come back to us in a few years, okay? Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Help from Jason Burns. Technical support. Today's music, Take the Gravel Home by the 100s, featuring on guitar our very own Jeff Schmidt.